Oh, we're playing. We're in the money. And my God, I will tell you that there was, I certainly the people around this room, but I don't think anybody in this building had any plans that we would have a roundtable this morning. Okay, great. Mike Spain is on his way. That we would have a show this morning. But here we are.
Like we always do. You know, we always just hoof it, change it as it goes. We got on yesterday morning, right, Joe? And were we ready for a one-day, 12-hour fun drive? No, we weren't. And then we just went on, and the money came pouring in. And it was enough to bring tears to anybody's eyes. It was so great.
It was about 11:20 yesterday when everything sort of went, because Alan came over. I was on the air. Alan came over and said, "Can we consult?" And he said, "You know, I think we got challenge money. Don't you think we can do it in a day?" And I'm like, and he said, "Well, let's see if you can make $50,000 by 1 o'clock. And we'll see how we do."
And
we did. And we made more than that. And then he and Ray went on.
It's amazing.
After that.
For the hour when we usually get about $6,000.
And you made.
And got 40.
40.
Wow.
And then Selma and I went on and made 60. And then Alan and I came on and it was all over. I can't even explain to people who haven't been in the fun drive before. But, you know, usually you give a stack of papers of maybe 30, 40 sheets in front of you. And that there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers on Alan's desk in front of us. And I'm doing my best trying to give Alan what mm-hmm. I'm counting. Mm-hmm. But they were coming in so fast, you couldn't, like, we knew, like, at one point that we had made it, but we didn't even know where we were. We just kept on going. And there was a point where we said, if we don't stop it now, we'll just be here all night.
So the 6 to 7 hour. You know, usually, okay, if you're really lucky, $10,000.
This is in the morning.
In the morning, $40,000.
Right.
$40,000.
Do you have a grand total yet? Have you? Because money came in even.
I think.
I
mean, it's still coming. It was. I don't know how much.
You'll announce it when you know.
I think. It was a million. It was a million.
We know that when we last left here last night, it was $1,025,000.
Yeah, or 50. Yeah, 50,000.
$1,050,000.
Yeah, and but you know, as we pointed out, you know that doesn't include the First Amendment fund,
right?
And so it's really was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. So we're I will not lie to you. We're all a little bleary eyed and a little
because we did a week's work in a day.
Yes, you know
so did the listeners.
Absolutely, they sure did. And I will tell you, you know, and Alan and I were talking about this last night, and we were doing a little postmortem in his office that the degree we've now decided that a fun drive can be taxing, and you know, you after a while, your nerves get frayed and that kind of thing. It seems to be associated with a dollar amount. So when we got to like $700,000 or $800,000, I was as bitter and filled with self-loathing as I normally. I'm on a Thursday. Even
absolutely.
Though it was only
everything got sped up.
Yeah, everything got sped up, you know, and it's still some poor volunteer asks you a question, you're like, it's over there.
Well, it must have been extraordinary because the Times Union, which is our partners and our friends, and we love them, they put an article in this morning going WMC meets fund drive goal in 12 hours. And
that's half a day, Alan. Just so
12
you know.
Hours. And it said, and the quote from me is interesting and I think really is indicative of what happened.
If I do say so myself.
Yes, it says, it's frankly all Trump, without a doubt.
Yeah.
It was.
I would just like to say on a personal note that I was listening, and to all those people who are calling me officious and other names, I'm taking the amount of money and the speed in which it came in as an endorsement to continue as I have been.
Look, you got a lot of positive comments.
Oh, yeah, much more positive than that.
No, Joe told me it's 50-50.
What I told you is all, like people would say, I love the panel. Even Rosemary. You take that as a plus, right?
No.
I love the panel, except for Rosemary and Alan.
Distinctly heard Rosemary Armijo, a great role model for women.
I did hear that.
True.
And also, let's just all take a little victory lap. Look, people
you
love
got
the,
tons
well,
of...
people got the panel. I mean, people love the panel, and we heard a ton on the panel, and we all make that up. So.
And you, yeah. as an interviewer, also, the word, I heard lots of comments. I must have been the hour I was listening yeah. or something. But.
No.
People are very sweet, and yeah,
they were, and we got. Usually, we get some negatives. We really got almost no negatives.
No
about
real
the
negative emails, which was lovely, and also
they were planning on
the,
Wednesday.
One troll wrote me that this proves how bad we are. I couldn't quite get it.
That's contradictory.
I couldn't quite
logic,
get it.
But.
I think I know who she was.
I have to. Well, anyway, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll get to the business at hand. I just want to again say, good. You know, we're just blown away. Everybody was so lovely, and yeah, I think you can look at it and say, well, there's a lot of. People are scared. People are, but the thing about it, and
they want to do something.
But
and
that's
you
it.
Gave them something to do.
And you know yes. what? It's everyone. It's that the same thing that makes people watch the news that there is an immigration ban, and you get up from your couch and you make a sign and you go to your local airport, is the same thing that you listen to us. You listen to what's happening. And you join your neighbor on the phone and online, right. and you all come together, and suddenly one is 50, is 100, is 500.
I think that's right.
It's absolutely amazing.
There was an article yesterday. I have to look up the source. I think it was the New York Times, about how the ban, the Muslim ban, is forcing ordinary people to do terrible things. And so they went into the airport and talked to, you know, a 60-year-old woman who was held for hours, like half a day, and they wouldn't get her a wheelchair. And a child who withheld them. And it wasn't Trump doing this. It wasn't Kellyanne Conway doing this. It was ordinary Americans. And the idea of the article was like, see, it's just like the Germans were doing these evil deeds in the name of obeying and doing our jobs. And then you turn on WAMC and people are giving money and saying, we want to hear freedom of the press. I found it really uplifting despite the comments about me.
Oh. There were no comments about you that were insignificant.
I woke up to it. I get in my car, turn it on, and there's Sarah telling me I'm officious.
No, come on.
But I'm not bitter.
No, don't be bitter. You should, really, I mean, everybody should be thrilled.
Nobody would ever call you bitter.
Yeah, no, another B word. I get it.
We're going to take...
I didn't say that either. I didn't even...
Well, that's a good turn.
We're up to the races.
Time for a break.
Yeah, let's take a break, Mike, and we'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Solid Ground, Center for a Balanced Life, Albany, offering mindfulness-based programs for stress, caregiving, grief, relapse prevention, ADHD, and weight management for individuals and groups, solidgroundny.org. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996, a surgeon's hands, a woman's touch, 518-786-1700.
Welcome to the round
Whoa.
Table. And we're ready for a show.
Not me.
Yeah. Well, not me either. I was
you
trying
just
to make good of it.
We'll talk.
A couple of tired people in this
yeah,
room.
Yeah, no.
This reminds me about Rosemary. This reminds me about the days out on Fire Island after we played
oh.
a lot of music.
It didn't take long.
As I said, we were in Alan's office last night and we were having a postmortem, and I was like laying down on the sofa pretty much, and Alan just looked at me and he goes, "You know, now we're doing the worst thing because we will never get up." Yeah, like, we'll just sit here.
We have all been in that situation, right?
Yes.
Where we've done something. We make the mistake of sitting by the chair next to the bed.
Catches
and
up
you
to
can't
you.
Get from the chair to the bed.
Yeah, you're just like...
You say nothing about brushing your teeth.
That's right. Just making it to the car. Thankfully, my wife was here to push me forward. Anyway, so let's talk about what's going on in the world. We missed a whole day's worth of news, so let's talk about the travel ban and the Justice Department urging the appeals court to reinstate Trump's travel ban. It all goes to court today. The Justice Department on Monday evening urged the federal appeals court to reinstate President Trump's targeted travel ban, saying immediate action was needed to ensure the nation's safety. The administration's brief was the last in a series of urgent pleas to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco, which is now set to rule on the most ambitious and disruptive initiative of Mr. Trump's young presidency. The ruling will almost certainly be followed by an appeal to the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, now Alan is speaking not unfamiliarly with something he doesn't know the first thing about.
Oh, he's using the third person.
Yes. Ooh. Is that dangerous?
Well, it's like what Trump does.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, here's what I'm worried about, and that is that there's always judge shopping that goes on in all of this stuff. Right? You find the right judge. You know,
well, going to the Ninth Circuit certainly wasn't the smartest thing if they had any...
I think that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Because San Francisco, we know about that. And, you know, it's a very liberal place. I don't have the slightest idea who's on that court.
Well, it was judges. One was appointed by Jimmy Carter, another by Clinton, yeah. And then one by George W. Bush. So it's a mix.
But also, I read an article, but the Washington State Attorney General who... was basically lying in wait for Boston ruling to expire because had worked for a week because saying that the finding that the ban and as written was deeply legally flawed.
Right. And it's messed up.
And with the governor and with legal counsel from throughout the country made the case. And from what I have seen, most legal experts look at his case and say it's a really strong case.
Well, they had on TV last night, he went up against Alan Dershowitz, who was making a case against it, which is pretty interesting because the case could go either way. I don't think it matters what circuit court it is. This is headed to the Supreme Court.
So what was Dershowitz saying?
Dershowitz was saying that there's a problem with trying to make a case for someone who is not a citizen. Why is it? They don't have constitutional rights.
When did he become a conservative?
I don't know. He has been switching. He doesn't like Trump. He makes that very clear.
Well, I mean, wrote a book about how the left left me.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he likes to be contradictory.
He's on Fox a lot. He does. He likes to take the opposite side. The guy from Washington is pretty impressive. What, am I doing it again? Am I being officious?
No.
Oh, okay.
On the contrary, he likes to be controversial.
Yeah, he
you
does.
Too.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there is an attraction to it. I can see it. But the guy from the prosecutor from Washington is he's pretty impressive. He's looked at this and he makes an apolitical argument. It's strictly on what's in the law, which we already know was put together rapidly and without a lot of consultation in the White House. So the thinking is that the this appeals court is going to keep the ban.
Hold it, the stay.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's not going to go into effect.
The ban on the
Muslim ban will stay in effect, and then it's going to go to the Supreme Court, where we have four justices evenly split. So then you get back to the merits of the law, which are it's really close. The president in this country does have a lot of power.
But don't you don't you see what's going on here, though? The president's case is that they have to act immediately because of impending risk to the United States. That will be the debate in the court, and the court is not it's not a public opinion survey. These are learned people who will listen to the arguments and say, why did it change from, you know, a week ago
to
6 months before that to now? How did this pressing danger just suddenly emerge?
There is a tortoise on the Supreme Court building etched in stone.
That's torts.
Well, there's torts also, but that's another
tortoise,
story.
But it's that it moves slow. You know, it's not a reactionary.
Well, it's not like right after 9/11
right.
when suddenly we're under attack.
We haven't been attacked in years.
Yeah, this was invoked really for political reasons, and I think that it's going to be the argument in the court today in San Francisco.
Thanks. Okay, so here's what's going to... No, I'm sorry, I interrupted and that was wrong. It was. Okay, so here's what happens now. There's a couple of things going on. There's the legal stuff going on. Then there's the fight for America's soul going on politically.
Right.
And that's why when I see the newspapers doing these stories about individuals, a doctor who is coming back to the States to save lives, or a child who was supposed to be in school, or each of these things puts a face on individuals, which people can understand, as opposed to the Trump nonsense, which is you're letting all these terrible people in, and when it happens, it's on you. And that's where the fight is.
And Trump also is using this as one more vehicle in which to press his attack on American institutions. He's attacked the judge in this case. We've seen him do this before, calling him a so-called judge.
Right.
And if we have an attack, it's on his head.
A Bush
that's
appoint-
just completely
a Bush appointee.
Yeah, it's just completely irresponsible. And now he's saying the press doesn't report terrorism when everybody, including my students, always says, when are you enough? You go on and on. But he has now counted 78 instances of a terrorist attack that allegedly the press has not covered, including Orlando. The Orlando Sentinel called back people they had laid off and won won prizes for their coverage, but we didn't cover it. And it's a way to say, see, I'm the one who knows there's a real emergency. Not the press, not the courts. You got to listen to me. It's in keeping with his whole... You know,
okay,
rant.
So let me, since we were playing what if, right? Or who if. What if, I want you guys to put yourselves in the minds of ISIS right now.
Oh, they love this.
Yeah. And what would you be thinking? What would you be planning to do as a result of this? The best thing for them right now, in fact, I believe is encouraged by Trump, would be to make a mess, to do something terrible. Because they would say that will really throw the incendiary device, which we need to get the attention and everything, into the fire.
Wow.
Well, I hate to strategize on behalf of ISIS, but I do agree with the notion that we are providing propaganda, anti-American propaganda, for ISIS and other enemies of the United States to use against us. And even the Ayatollah today said that. It shows America's true face when he talks about Trump.
We're going to take a break. We will continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. It's a bonus edition. We didn't think we'd be here, but here we are. We'll be back right after this. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Nice to have you with us as always. A reminder, you can join in on the conversation panel at WAMC.org. We have a couple letters there, Alan.
We do. Congrats on the fund drive, say Bill and Carol, Bill in Lake George. Do you think that not even one more Republican will vote against this utterly unqualified nominee is due to blind devotion to their party, or is it they are just afraid of Trump?
Well, I don't know what the reason is. I do find it hard that this supremely unqualified candidate has the support she does. Just one more Republican coming over would do it. Why?
Can I ask a very naive question, perhaps, on my part?
Okay. Yes, you can.
Which is, what does it hurt? Meaning, if you're a Republican, like, what do they have to lose in this case?
Right.
Because I would think, you know, we talk about courage, but you have something of somebody that, and maybe this, again, is naive, that all of those Republicans who are voting can't believe and feel that she's the best choice.
No, they don't. And rule number one, okay, who needs it? I'm avoiding this, right? Who needs it? They're not going to say...
Who
needs the controversy? You know, rule number two, primaries. Somebody's going to bring this up in a primary that I was for supporting the Department of Education as opposed to a candidate who will clearly destroy it.
If she does something stupid, which seems highly probable, that will come back to haunt other people. And getting rid of her doesn't mean you're not putting a Trump appointee in. There'll be someone equally ideological but competent, someone who understands schools or knows anything about. So I don't understand why the Republicans wouldn't just say, okay, here's an olive branch to you. We'll get somebody else. She's out. It seems to me that they're trying to establish we're in charge and we get everything we want.
Yes.
They're doing it from the get-go.
I agree with that, too.
I think that's a fair analysis. It's a show of force, show of strength, a show of unity.
Yeah. But I got news for you guys. Based on the kinds of things that we're seeing from Saturday Night Live on, the numbers are going lower. It's freaking the guy out. He is not doing well right now. And what's happening is he's become a laughingstock. He really has.
Which he hates. I mean, yesterday on the morning, an early Joe, Joe Scarborough.
I don't like him.
It's Morning Joe.
I don't like him.
He made a comment about how it looks like Bannon is calling the shots. And immediately there's a tweet from the President of the United States, who you would think might have other things to do, saying, no, I call my own shots. He's answering a talk show host instead of governing. Now, that's a small thing. I realize that, and but that's really, isn't that disturbing?
I'm all for the power of a talk show host.
Maybe he'll answer you.
But the Bannon thing, among others, is really this. He is very sensitive about the fact that Bannon is running the thing. And as you remember from the Grim Reaper from Saturday Night Live this weekend,
that was a little over the top.
I thought it was, and then Spicer came out.
The Spicer parody was
Melissa the power Harvey. Of Saturday Night Live has. Increased, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
What is its viewership?
Yeah, they
right
were kind
now?
Of playing. You know, they were sort of on the ratings decline. No more though.
Oh no, it's very trenchant.
Yeah. No, this has been good for both CNN and Saturday Night Live. Joel from Port Jervis writes: I had a very strange dream. In the dream, I turned on my radio and I hear, "I'm Ray, I'm Alan, and you're the volunteers." It's day one of the fun drive. It all seems so real. But I knew it was all a dream because this morning when I turned on the radio, there was this regularly scheduled programming. No fun drive. No more anchovy and pepperoni pizza before bedtime for me.
That's funny.
You have some creative listeners.
We do. Hi, panel. I'm a first-time writer, but a regular listener. Yep. Just had to let Rosemary know that she's my favorite.
Oh, good. I want to keep that one, please.
You may have it.
We got quite a few here, actually, in your mailbox. You'll notice.
If we live closer, I would want to take your class, and that's from Doris in Orange, Massachusetts. What kind of orange cord do you want? What color? 1-800. No, forget that.
That was a circa 1967 radio ad for a local Ford dealership.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
No, actually, there was a great song also called When It's Peach Picking Time in Orange, New Jersey.
Oh, my God. This is worse than Fire
when
Island.
It does get
worse when he's tired.
When it's apple picking time in Orange, New Jersey, we'll make a peach of a pear. Okay. Joseph says, I'm wondering if you, Pauls, can suggest one or two Republican legislators to call on the phone and urge against approving the DeVos woman. I want someone who is on the fence or at least someone open-minded. Any useful ideas? That ain't our job. And we're not doing it.
Well, can I bring up?
Yes, it is.
Well, you as a commentator can do it.
I think Deb Fisher in Nebraska is a good one to go after. She said she was going to take a look. I don't know what she could have looked at that convinced her to stay Republican, but I would make a call to her.
Okay, and John says, Rosemary said, this country hasn't been attacked in years. What, San Bernardino, Orlando? John and Troy.
Okay, point taken.
All right. Brady says, Trump was probably a big influence in the enthusiasm behind the fund drive, but I gave because WMC is a valued resource and a dear friend to our community. How can you listen to and not support this station? Money speaks, and the 12-hour fund drive is a testament to the good work you do. Thank you and keep it up. And that's from Brady, who is from Dalton, Mass., but now a resident of Silver Spring, Maryland, who listens when I can via the app. Okay, but let me just say something to you. Brady, that's interesting that you say that, and you're right. They should all be one-day fund drives, but they're not. They're not. We've had 9-day fund drives. So there had to be what we social scientists call an intervening variable here.
intervening indeed. Let's here's something I wanted to ask you about. There have been reports because the president has tweeted such that they would just disobey the ban. How do you do that?
Well, I think they don't do it, and I'll tell you why, because I think it's impeachable. I think when you do that, then you get what we call a constitutional crisis. You get one branch of government against the other one. And I think it's clear that they can't do that because they know it opens them up to an impeachment charge.
Well, so does not divesting, and he did that anyway.
No, I don't see it the same way. I don't see it the same way, Rosemary.
No, I agree more with Alan. I think it would create a crisis, a constitutional crisis. And if you're not listening to the commander-in-chief and you're part of the administration, like the State Department or the Department of Homeland Security, then you have chaos beyond belief.
Well, here's my theory is that he's not doing it because it would require implementation by TSA, by border guards, and he's not sure he would get that. It's like if he puts in torture, would the military go along with it? Mm. If he's disobeyed, that would be a big crisis for him, no?
Oh, it would be. Yeah. No, that would be. That's really what I'm referring to. If he ordered it against the court's ruling, unilaterally, and said, "Never mind what the court says, go do
okay,
this,"
so we're agreeing.
And then they disobey him, they have a constitutional crisis. Well, they have a crisis the other way too. I mean,
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, just in terms of precedent. But was it? What about Nixon's refusal to give up the tapes?
Well, it was ultimately
court said
a
you
court
gotta
case
do it. Yeah.
That went
it.
To the Supreme Court, and he did in July of 1974, and he was gone by August 9th.
Minus 18 minutes, I want to remind everybody.
That's true, but, you know, that was just an accident that Rosemary
Wood,
his secretary, had. You know, she was...
Well, Arlo says it wasn't an accident, that the 18 minutes was the exact length of Alice's restaurant.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Let's take a break.
We're really showing
back,
your age.
We'll continue.
We are.
We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, and hikers May 6th. I Love New York and Ulster County Alive sponsors MohonkPreserve.org. And Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Designed for the next 100 years, CandHArchitects.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain join us, and it is a delight to be with you and to be back on the. Oh, there we go. To be back on the air, isn't that nice? Here's what happened yesterday. We were in such a rush of making $1 million in 12 hours. That there were a lot of people who helped us, and we didn't get to thank them.
We didn't, and it's so important that we do, Joe. And the dinner last night was just so superb.
And we want to thank Lillian the Rose and Boston Spa for that for the dinner. Silverware, plates, the whole, it was very nice. Cloth napkins, Rosemary. It was very, very fancy.
I wish I had been here.
also, thanks to 9 Miles East Farm in Schuylerville, New York, for our lunch yesterday, to Larry's Southwestern Sauces for chili. We want to thank our friends at the Black Cat Bakery, Black Cat Cafe and Bakery in Sharon Springs. They had delicious treats and croissant of Albany as well. Field Goods of Athens, they had great apples. We want to thank the Vermont Coffee Company in Middlebury, Vermont. We also want to thank Daily Eats of Albany, Our Daily Eats, and Gatherers Granola of Schenectady. SoCo Creamery for providing us with ice cream, Crescent Creamery for providing our half and half, crescentcreamery.com, and to Cabot Creamery from Vermont for the yogurt and cheese for the fun drive. I just want to also point out, well, two things. Also, thanks to Brugger's Bagels for the discount they gave us on the bagels and the cream cheese and all of that stuff. Also, thanks to Rock Hill Bakehouse of Glens Falls for providing lunch for today. Volunteers are still coming in, so even though the fun drive is over, we have a mountain of paperwork because a week's worth of stuff has to be processed.
Right. We need all the help we can get.
So there are a wonderful team of volunteers who are still coming in. So we thank those people because even though we're off the air and back doing our jobs, still a lot has to be done, and the volunteers are coming in and helping out. So we thank them, too, from the bottom of our hearts.
I'm curious. Was it more that the more people were giving in a compressed period of time, or were those who were giving more money?
No. It was a little of both, but mostly it was all the people who had given 7 days gave in one day.
And also, one of the things that we, not getting too much in the weeds here, but, you know, one of the things that you worry about in a fund drive is that you get new members over a longer period of time, and you see your new member rate, and when it's shorter, you have less new members where you would if you had a longer period of time. What was stunning yesterday, it was both with the lockbox and with the fund drive, was the number of new members, the people who had never... I'm a brand new member. I've been listening for years. I'm giving for the first time. It was really stunning.
A ton.
We'll have the number soon, but it's really incredible and very gratifying. So.
Okay, let's earn their respect now.
Absolutely.
Get to the news.
President Trump appears to be laying the groundwork to preemptively shift blame for any future terrorist attack on U.S. soil. I'm going back to the story that Rosemary referenced earlier, from his administration to the federal judiciary as well as the media. In recent tweets, Trump personally attacked Judge James Robart, a U.S. district judge in Washington State, for putting our country in such peril with his ruling that temporarily blocked enforcement of the administration's ban on all refugees as well as citizens of 7 majority Muslim countries from entering the United States. If something happens, blame him and the court system. People pouring in, bad, Trump wrote in a tweet on Sunday.
People pouring in. And there's no evidence of that at all.
No.
Well, he's setting it up so that should anything happen at all...
Oh, sure.
It's not his fault. It's not on his watch. It's because of the media and those courts, those so-called courts.
Yeah,
he has a big mouth. We found that during the campaign. And many millions of people in this country were willing to look over that to forgive it. Do they feel the same way now that he's president? And in addition to this, he was on an interview with O'Reilly and said, Putin is a killer, but have you seen our record? And equated the United States wars.
Quite a statement.
Yeah, with this thug who controls, who is the dictator of Russia, who has put his enemies to death and the media into jail. And he's saying, well, have you looked at the things we've done? This is a man who has, and I should know, no governing on his mouth at all. And it's becoming dangerous.
And you saw the Republican response, which was
Trump will be Trump.
Is that some concern? Not enough?
McConnell said, I wouldn't have taken on the courts.
No, McConnell said stronger things than that. He talked about Putin and how,
a thug.
He was KGB and everything. I thought he was... He was pretty. I was surprised.
Thought
at
it was
how
very safe,
firmly,
Mike. You know, I didn't think he said anything like, the president needs to be careful, or I would advise the president to stop. It was like, well, Putin is a thug. He dismissed his comments.
I think the Senate Majority Leader, probably the second most powerful Republican in the country, doing that is significant.
Yeah. Then on Monday, Trump seemed to spread that blame to include news organizations. In a speech to U.S. Central Command, the president accused the media of failing to report on some terrorist attacks for what he implied were nefarious reasons. ISIS is on a campaign of genocide, committing atrocities across the world, Trump told commanders at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. Using an acronym for the Islamic State terrorist group, he added, "You've seen what happened in Paris and Nice. All over Europe it's happening. It's gotten to a point where it's not even being reported, and in many cases, the very, very dishonest press doesn't want to report it. They have their reasons, and you understand that. Sean Spicer says the terror attacks are underreported by the media. Meanwhile, news organizations have reported extensively about terrorist attacks around the world, including the two in France mentioned by the president. The president did not offer a single example of an attack that had gone underreported to support his
accusation. We even covered the Bowling Green massacre on Mars. I don't get this. He said, you understand. I don't understand. What are the reasons that the press would have to cover it up?
You know?
He felt members of the media don't always cover some of those events to the extent that other events might get covered. Protests will get blown out of the water, and yet an attack or a foiled attack doesn't necessarily get the same coverage.
This is a complaint that has existed against the news media, you know, for a long time, that the farther away something is, the less close to Western culture something happens, an earthquake happens in China, and it gets a mention, where if it were to happen in Canada, it would be all over the news. I mean, there's proximity, and there is some level of bias of where, you know, the most interesting stories are. And I suppose, believe it or not, if there's isolated incidents where people commit violence, nobody dies, there's no mass killing, and it's kind of fuzzy what the details are, they don't get the attention that other clearly terrorist attacks would get, you know, and you can rack them up. And
wow.
You mentioned Bowling Green.
We have to stop this equivocating. The press does this all the time. Like, we take on all this blame, like, oh, yeah, maybe there are some things here we do wrong. No, we cover terrorist events, and anything that the president said, I think we need to counter with, prove it, which he cannot. Anderson Cooper was bending over backwards yesterday to say, well, maybe he means it's because we are slow to call attacks terrorists. We wait for the authorities to call that. Maybe that's what he's referring to.
But isn't that
true? I
think
he's just talking.
Isn't that true, though?
We're not going to change anything. So I don't think we offer that as a justification. We cover these events.
His characterizations are way off and are completely incorrect.
Mike was right about proximity to the event being
until the next story comes along, how much attention it gets. I mean, that is the nature of news.
The 78 events that he listed included Orlando, Paris attacks. Come on,
we know all about those. They have both
proximity and relevance, and we covered them completely. Yep.
Chris Cuomo on CNN today said, "I want to show you my inbox and the mail that we received of people saying, 'Don't you have anything else to cover? It's the ninth day after this happened, and you're still covering this terrorist attack.'"
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. Oh, we have letters.
We have some letters. DeVos, is it DeVos?
Yes.
DeVos is the story. But politicizing education tells us politicians don't serve the people. They have their own agendas. And that was sent by Mike on the iPhone. Dear panel, do you think it's wise of President Trump to insult the judiciary and its right to decide matters when he has a case in court? It strikes me that even conservative judges will react badly to the contempt shown in these tweets and feel the executive branch needs to learn about checks and balances.
Well, I disagree. I don't think judges are going to act political. They're going to ignore his rants, and they're going to... I trust that all the judges, whether they're Bush appointees or Clinton appointees or whatever, are going to make an honest judgment.
As Mario Cuomo used to say, I deny that. And here's why. Because when it goes to the Supreme Court with a 4-4, eight people, I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be a 4-4 split.
We do know that the judges have been listening to his public statements.
But I
was going to point out that nowhere does the Muslim ban say Muslim in the writing, what was submitted to the court. But the judge, Robart, said, well, we know it's a Muslim ban because, well, he told us that. His public statements were all about Muslims.
Well,
they did take that into account. The
attorney general from Washington's
case. Yes, he argued that.
He uses his public statements to talk about the contradiction of his policy versus reality.
And right. I'm not sure he wants to win in court as much as he wants to influence his base and public opinion that the judiciary is bad.
Oh, I think you're right, Alan.
Yeah, that's true.
The unfortunate thing is that this becomes very divisive. It's doing nothing to bring the country together. It's just making people stake out their political positions, and it's a very tense time.
And people are also talking about, with as we go through the Gorsuch nomination, that there is a ownership that the president has taken, that this is my nominee, this is my judge.
It's a test of
some
me.
People have called on him to come out and speak about the attacks on the judiciary, and he'll be asked about that when he goes before the Senate hearings, I'm sure.
Hello, panel. You state that the fight for America's soul, in quotes, is a more important fight than the legal challenges taking place on the Muslim ban. Now, how have we arrived at a point where fuzzy news stories leave a larger impression on American citizens than the laws which govern us? I would only answer that by saying Donald Trump is the president.
What's the fuzzy news stories being referred
well,
to?
Well, I think what he's saying is that my point, and I was the one who said that, is that they were the writer Andrew was saying my position is that the America's soul is a more important fight than the legal challenges taking place on the Muslim ban. No such thing. I was just saying, hey, that's the political attitude of Trump, and that's what he was doing. Okay, so
can I ask one question, because I've been following this. Have you read any place credible? It's all over conservative press. But have you read any place credible about arrests in Berkeley after the free speech demonstrations went violent? Supposedly.
Yes. It seems like there were some. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Supposedly a staffer from the university was arrested. And I cannot verify this on press that actually
checks
facts.
Yeah, yeah.
NPR ran a story this morning about the decline in international travel for business and pleasure by American citizens due to uncertainty about the reception they might receive from citizens and authorities in other countries. Will Trump's isolationism reduce international travel? Will this become part of a pattern that leads to the Trump recession?
Anyone?
No.
Okay. Next letter.
Next. Okay. Panel, I'm curious if you're hoping for the Trump administration's failure or success.
Good question.
I find myself conflicted when I ponder that choice, but I'd like to hear what you all have to say on this question. Thanks. Mike, you go.
No, I struggle with that. I mean, I don't want our country to fail, and to the extent that, you know, how you define success. Now, if success is, a repressive regime that takes away a lot of the things like our protection of our environment and the protection of civil rights, I regard that as a failure. But my definition of success would be a continuation of those protections. And if that's what we get, I'm for him to succeed.
Yeah, but there are those people who feel that if he makes a mistake, it's good. That's good. We'd rather have him make a mistake and be seen as a fool than we would have him do good.
I think what Mike said was profound, and I'd like to be noble enough to say I subscribe to that, but I do like when he messes up. I do like when he looks
like a fool. Exactly.
If he's trying to take away your rights, if he's trying to take away the protection of the environment or our health or demolish Obamacare without replacing it, you do want to see him fail.
Yes, but what if he says something good?
And his embarrassments do help him fail.
Well, I've asked that. What would it be? What would we say? I've said that I would publicly pull back my criticism of him and announce him as my favorite president if he could actually put in the health care program that he's promised. I'm no big fan of Obamacare, but I don't think he can change it or fix it. But if he did that, I would say, okay, great. If he brings back jobs that also are not like in the coal industry, that would throw out solar, which we've made great strides in, and bring back horrible pollution, I would say, great. I don't see it yet. I will.
Wait a minute.
I will.
You would say great if all of a sudden our air quality took a dive.
No, if he could come out with some sort. No. That's the opposite.
If you
Mike.
Could do it without that.
Yeah, the
yes,
opposite
I'm sorry,
of that.
I'm sorry.
The opposite of that.
Okay, panel. No, no good.
Well, let's take a pause.
Okay, sure.
Take a break, and we will come right back. We want to go over to news with Ray Graff. I know he's been chopping at the bit. He was, didn't get to report anything yesterday.
He's got a bit.
So, yes. You're right.
Well, he was on the air, I believe.
Yes. He has an alibi.
His eyes are puffy, too.
Jumping on the bit.
Thank you for noticing. We'll be right back after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning, the 7th of February, 5 minutes past 10 o'clock. And We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain with us this morning on our panel discussion. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, where we get letters like these.
From Ryan, I've been a volunteer during a busy challenge, so I can imagine how hard the volunteers worked yesterday and how exhausted, quote, they must have been. Kudos to the volunteers.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, and so, and then, in response to an earlier listener, I think it is safe to assume that most factions of the Republican Party have wanted to abolish the Department of Education for at least 30 years. DeVos' choice would be perfectly in line with this plan. Now, let me just start that one by saying there are two things in politics. You either want something or you want the issue, and wanting the change is not nearly as important as the issue. So they've had the issue all of these years. Somehow it hasn't gotten done. So maybe that's what's afoot here.
Well, it's a massive bureaucracy right now, and this is a president who has promised jobs. He's already announced a hiring freeze. It's not really in keeping with his own policy. And the one thing that gives me consolation is that education commissioners don't do all that much. How much harm can she really do? If she abolishes the agency, that's not really her, it's Trump. Right?
And the Congress.
Can she really hurt?
You know, I think your point's well. I mean, she would have deputies, but she sets the tone. And it's a political statement just to put somebody in there who has not been a friend to the public education system on which our country was founded.
Oh, yeah, I know all the negatives. I totally do. And I as I said, I don't understand why Republicans
practically
are
speaking,
pushing her.
How much would it really matter?
Exactly.
I mean, I think you make a good point there.
Well, she is going to be the leader, assuming she gets. And a leader is important because they can set out some parameters and they can set out some agendas and things like that. Oh. So I would say that's important.
But she's no less qualified or no more qualified than Ben Carson is to be the HUD secretary.
Well,
no one's fighting that.
Except
two
that Ben,
don't make a
Ben
right.
Carson did great in his confirmation hearing. Mm-hmm. He put in work and he prepared. And okay, even Elizabeth Warren said, okay, I can live with that. Betsy DeVos didn't do that. She was woefully
unprepared. It was arrogance
unprepared.
By not coming prepared. And then,
well, maybe she couldn't.
Well,
why
that happened? Well, maybe she couldn't. There are some people who prepare for the test and still get 45.
Okay, so that proves she's incompetent.
No, I'm not arguing
that. She either
that.
Didn't want to or could not do it.
Well, Pam writes a critical letter. I wanted to read it to all of you because I'm the one, obviously, who's worst at this. I love your show, but get so, capital S-O, frustrated when you waste time fooling around among yourselves. Please stick to the very important topics that need to be covered in these terrifying times. And that's Pam, who loves our show.
It's Alan's fault.
Yes, it's true. Okay.
Blame it on Fire Island.
I believe.
Uh-oh, we're doing it again.
No, I believe that people would not respond the way they do.
If not for the personal touch.
If we didn't have
that's part
the dynamic that we have.
Part of the shtick.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Charles says, Alan, there's a report of the 60 million acre lease deal of Siberian oil fields that Exxon signed with Putin in 2014, which requires the acquisition of Ukraine ports to distribute to world markets without taxation. Now that Tillerson is Secretary of State and Crimea is held by the Russians, is all they need for trillions of oil profit to Trump to restrain NATO. Conspiracy theory or valid concern?
Valid concern.
Valid
we're seeing lots of activity in Ukraine right now, and I swear it's hard to figure out who is scamming who in this. There's been wrongdoing on both sides, and I don't trust either Tillerson or Trump to play this straight. They're not listening to intelligence. I don't know how to rule it. Have you read about never mind. I'm going off on a tangent. I'll bring this up as something we should discuss another day. Eastern Europe and
I think that's a whole.
Yeah, it's crazy, and
you
it's,
can't just do it casually.
Yeah, I can't do this as a side note. Sorry.
Arlene says, I feel your listenership would like to hear regular news about resistance actions that have happened and are being planned. Also, recommendations of people to call and things to do. Keeping the pressure on this presidency is so important. We're looking for guidance. And then says, Rosemary is my favorite.
Oh, great.
The
thank
best,
you.
B-E-S-T, capitalized. And I know many others who think that.
Oh, that's good. The same people who organized the Women's March in Washington put up this very intriguing note on their website yesterday saying, general strike. No date. Announcements to come. So I think that's what's in the works, and pay attention to that. There's also, every day, there are groups now who send out, this is what you can do this week. And it's usually calling people to advocate a certain position by our legislators. It's donating money. There's petitions going out. There are, today at the university, and I have nothing to do with this, there's a Trump teach-in that I hope many students will go to for,
and there's
like
the
2 hours.
And there's the Roselle plan.
That's the Roselle plan.
That on Valentine's Day at 12 noon, everybody will stop what they're doing, just like they did in the film, The Day the World Stood Still.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and do nothing. There, everybody's got a plan, you know.
I think that she's right. The writer is correct that there's this great hunger. Say, we want to do something. Lead us, and it's
well. You saw
it
yesterday.
Early.
You saw it yesterday in the fun drive.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's true.
Hello, panel. I've been seeing a Facebook post about a national strike February 17th to 20th formed by various resistance groups collaborating. A call to stay home from work, not buy anything, peacefully protest, and wear green has gone out. Reactions?
Yeah, it's very unclear to me. I've heard February and April, and as I say, that's why I've been watching it, and that woman's the group that organized Washington had that note out. I don't know how it would work, and I don't know what the implications would be. The idea is that women stop working for some period of time. So if I don't go teach a class that day, do I get fired? I mean, it's a really interesting.
I think people want to know what the point of it would be, other than to underscore the contribution to the workforce or to society.
But think about what the marches meant.
Sure.
It was a huge impact.
Yeah. Right.
So there may not have been a contribution.
Yeah, but you'd see it, right?
I mean, this is a visual demonstration.
This is a media thing and a male thing too. That we have to have one point. The object of this march is to accomplish the following:
MAIL or MALE.
MALE.
Okay.
And Occupy Wall Street failed.
You don't
think
women want to know why I'm not going to go to work that day?
No, we somehow know.
Oh. Okay.
And I think that Occupy Wall Street failed because it wouldn't appoint leaders to talk to the media, wouldn't make clear what the agenda was. And the women's march started the same way. Oh, it'll never work. It's just a bunch of women. You didn't even wait for them to do anything. And I think that was wrong. I think it was uniting, and it became very clear at the demonstration what the objectives were. And I think the same thing could happen with the strike.
I think it
you
was
will
instant
find out.
For the women's march. I think
Not
it was
instant.
A statement of solidarity against the misogyny that Trump had demonstrated.
Yeah.
I think
but
it that, picked up its momentum.
Think of all those pink hats.
You know, it wasn't instant. It took from November until January to put together.
Oh, I know people were planning it, you know.
Yeah,
you
the
know.
Minute he was elected.
Nevertheless, what was instant was what happened at the airports.
With the immigration.
Right. That was instant.
And
that was,
one wonders whether that would have happened without the women's marches.
Good question.
I think that's a good point.
Well, and isn't the strike would be, I mean, if you have it be for all genders and for everyone.
It is. I mean, but the idea is just like the march, women march, and the work. It was filled with men. It was filled with,
no, I understand
with
that.
Every guy. So the same thing would be true at the strike. But the idea is that women led it. So women-led movement. And the goals haven't come out. They haven't put any of the details out, but it's pretty clear. It's against misogyny. It's against unfair pricing. Women get paid less. I think it's really intriguing. I would love to participate. I also want to know what happens to me if I do.
Interesting.
We want you here the 17th.
And if there's a strike, I can't do it.
Well, Naomi wrote to us and said,
I love
your fooling around, balanced with hard subjects. Thank you, Naomi.
Yeah,
we're in
you.
Great love with you. Thank you for that. I believe it's entirely possible there would be an attack on U.S. soil blamed on ISIS. However, I would not put it past the current administration to actually be behind the attack and arrange it to look like ISIS.
I really don't want to go there.
I hope not.
Conspiracy. How about you, Mike?
I hope not.
I think you're right. I think we should not go there.
Okay. Yeah. And James says, the reason Trump thinks the press does not report terrorism accurately is because he gets his news from Fox. What more needs to be said?
Well, Fox reports terrorism,
he's watching
terrorism
MSNBC,
too.
We know, in the morning. Yeah.
But all of these
and
media.
And Saturday Night Live. He watches a lot of NBC, doesn't he? And then what is that show that Schwarzenegger's on?
Apprentice. Celebrity Apprentice.
That's an NBC show.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's more than Fox.
But all of them cover extremist terrorism. They all do.
Yeah.
How can you get away from it?
Question. What is going to happen to Trump's nonprofit in New York? Are they being investigated by the New York Attorney General? What about
the Trump
not
Foundation?
Yes.
What
it was,
about
it was dissolving? I thought. I thought it was pretty.
It
much
was,
going
but
out
the
business.
But the Attorney General was still going to investigate.
Yes, because you don't stop. You know, somebody robs a bank, you don't stop investigating the robbery of the bank. You know what I mean? Maybe a poor analogy, but you see my point.
There was the article in the New York Times over the weekend regarding the close ties that Donald Trump continues to have with his businesses.
Yes.
Much against
what, a shock.
What was. I know.
I read
contrary
that and said, wow, I can't believe it.
Assertions that he was going to stay out of it, I guess. Yeah.
But there was all that paperwork on that
desk. Wait a second. That would make him a liar.
By the way, the press did go up later and look. There were blank papers
empty
in those
papers
folders.
Empty papers, yeah, folders.
Oh, my gosh.
No, somebody came up with a Staples bill.
Okay, Julie says, question, what is going to happen to Trump's... Oh, we did that. Okay, thank you very much for
thank
that.
Thank you.
Panel, I'm curious if you are hoping for a Trump administration's failure or success. We did that, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, we did that. Okay. Yeah. Well. No.
I think you're recycling. I think.
I'm recycling. Okay. That's
all right. Great. We'll move on to other topics. Hey, Mike. If Monday night you got a fun drive, you're over at 6:30. We could have done other stuff last night. We just went to bed, but we could have done other things.
You're talking about a story in the Times Union today by Rick Carlin that we're well into the political fundraiser season in Albany, the state capital, and last night there were like a whole bunch of different fundraisers. I think there were 9 going on, 5 in one building, the Ford Orange Club. So you could like do speed dating, and it costs anywhere from like $500 to $750, depending on the rank of the legislator.
It's disgusting.
And it's a common practice. They're crammed in every night that the legislature is in town.
It's legalized bribery. Let's face it.
Before the end of March. And that's what the good government groups like Blair Horner from the New York Public Interest Research Group and others are saying. There should be this should be made illegal. They should just basically stop it. They've tried to limit it to being at least 10 miles from Albany to make it inconvenient, but it's only a block from the Capitol and one building, and that's where you get more than half of them. So it is a common practice. It raises a ton of money. If you wanted to go to all 9 last night, it would have cost you $4,350 to hit them all. And even if you didn't hit them all, you probably would have your name. They'd know you gave them money.
I don't mean to be overly self-serving, but do you think our fund drive put a dent in any of those?
I doubt it. Plunkett of Tammany Hall said, in the classic Plunkett of Tammany Hall, he said, there's honest bribery and there's dishonest bribery. And this is what he means by honest bribery, and it's disgusting.
Well, it is disclosed. In all fairness, it is disclosed.
Oh, stop.
We know how much different
members
stop.
You know
getting.
Why they're giving it to them. They're giving it to him. You
money
know.
Buys access.
Yes.
And
if
access
you say
is
into the
influence.
Microphone here, if you do this for me, then I'll do this for you, that's dishonest bribery. But going to all of those things, giving him the money, it's disgusting.
When there's a place right up the street from the Ford Orange Club that could use that money.
Without question.
Well, what would you replace it with? Obama actually tried to do away with lobbying in Washington. He came in gung-ho that he was going to stop it. So is Trump
I think
now.
Trump said the same thing.
Yeah, and it fell apart because there's no other way really to get information and concerns to politicians than through lobbyists.
And that's in the First Amendment, too, by the way. The
right,
right to do that.
The right to lobby is in the first. I don't remember that part of it.
Well,
I'll have to look at my shirt.
Right
you look at your shirt and how many letters? Words?
45
words. Yeah, I don't see the word lobby in there. I
no.
agree. Yeah.
Hmm.
But
they got to make the
speech.
Memo line bigger, though, so you can write down exactly what you want associated with that check.
Well, you have a right to free speech, and that is lobbying.
Right now, it's protected.
All right. So President Trump is having a fight with the state of California.
Yay. Go California.
Yeah.
During the Super Bowl interview that he did with Bill O'Reilly, he said, I spent a week in California. O'Reilly said, as you know, they are now voting on whether they should become a sanctuary state. So California and the USA are on a collision course. How do you see it? Trump replied, I think it's ridiculous. Sanctuary cities, as you know, I'm very much opposed to sanctuary cities. They breed crime. There's a lot of problems. We have to well defund. We give tremendous amounts of money to California. California, in many ways, is out of control, as you know. Obviously, the voters
agree.
Yeah,
they voted against
them. Or otherwise, they wouldn't have voted for me. So defunding is your weapon of choice. O'Reilly asked. A weapon? I don't want to defund the state, Trump said. I don't want to defund anybody. I want to give them the money they need to properly operate as a city or a state. If they're going to have a sanctuary city, we have to do that. Certainly, that would be a weapon.
So it sounds like a yes.
Unpack that.
Unpack that. A weapon? No, I don't want to. Yes.
Good invitation. Yeah.
But, well, you know, I want to just go back to the assertion that sanctuary cities are unsafe. I'll bet you, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'll bet you that cities where the police department and the authorities have the trust of the people that live there are going to have a better time keeping it safe than if people were afraid and in the shadows and won't report crimes, won't participate in social service programs that they need to protect their families because they're afraid of being deported.
It's interesting you say that because I read in one of the tabs this morning that I think we have the lowest crime rate ever in New York City. It's incredible.
Are there any undocumented immigrants?
Oh, I'm sure there aren't.
How about Chicago? That's not a sanctuary city. No.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to be cynical. This is too bad. I mean, it just underscores that, you know, that what's going on with California and the president underscores that we are a nation divided. And I don't really see anybody moving to the middle ground. I see everybody just kind of staking out their territory. And I suppose that has to happen first. But it's not a good time.
The mayor of Springfield, Massachusetts, made it clear that they were not a sanctuary city. And he said, we can't afford to lose the money.
Yes, but I mean, what happens when his police department needs to go into an apartment building where there's an immigrant family and they are trying to protect these people and the people won't cooperate and they're scared? And I mean, it's not a good situation.
I think it's interesting that sanctuary cities are on his target right now because it's going to clarify legally what can be done.
Right.
And can the president use money that goes to cities for to use it as a retaliatory weapon? This is all another legal case. And I think sanctuary cities will come out ahead, and so I sort of want to see it. Bring it on.
All right. We are. Do you have any? You're good on letters. All right. So one more topic, and then we will move on.
Oh, I can find some. I'm sure.
No, I'm good. I just didn't know if you had any in front of you. The final topic is let's talk about Israel real quick. Controversial legislation in Israel reflects shift away from two-state peace deal. Israel's parliament approved a controversial bill late yesterday giving the government authority to retroactively legalize thousands of homes in West Bank settlements and dozens of unauthorized hilltop outposts that sit on privately owned Palestinian land.
Well, this is just going to underscore, you know, fuel tensions between the Trump administration and that of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And it looked like it was going to be very cozy, but suddenly there's a fly in the ointment.
Well, I think what happened is Netanyahu got the message. They said, everything's off the table, and you can do whatever you want. Yeah. And then the Trump people got a little bit worried that this is going in the wrong direction. Well, when you play with people like Netanyahu, and I'm not saying they're the same people now, but Putin, these people are
not. They play hardball.
Yeah.
Well, what you're seeing is around the world, leaders are adjusting to the new reality of a Trump administration. So in Britain, you have a vote that Trump will not be invited into parliament.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. And
you have the Speaker of the Parliament saying, no, we don't want him.
Yeah, which
and Le Pen has announced that she's going to, you know, run for president in France, and she's a Trump supporter. I mean, you know, people are kind of lining
up. And you're seeing
up.
Movement in Ukraine and this action by Israel. Iran, kind of a dangerous one, is also now, and they varied. First, they called him, a freshman president. He's kind of going crazy with the anti-ballistic missile.
Yep.
Remember that? And now you're hearing, with the ban, you're hearing more radical stuff that he's dangerous, so...
And there's Australia, of course.
Oh, yeah.
We are
a new enemy.
We are out of time, but I do want to just take a moment to, of course, thank everybody who helped out during the fun drive, all the volunteers, everyone who, of course, supported us, and all of the moral and financial support. We thank you very much. Thanks also to Alan and Rosemary and Mike for making up the panel this morning. We'll continue with the roundtable after the short break.